Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
That's, hey, maybe that's why he's here. If it happens, will you give me at least a couple minutes or?
Well, that's not my call. Oh, in the news, sure.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be the lead.
If we ever get to it, I mean, come on, get to the news.
Yeah. Okay, 1 hour straight on Jamie Kloss. A brief pause here because we're going to get to other things, but we certainly will get back to it as the afternoon moves along. But we'll give you some nonsense on this day. We're also going to give you a very serious conversation coming up. Lindsay saw this, the headline, "When the Illness is a Mystery, Patients Turn to These Detectives." So I'm looking forward to that conversation coming up soon. Costco. I don't know if I'm still a Costco member or not. I might be. I might not be. You guys ever Costco? Never nope. Costco? Wow.
If I would have been a member, it would have been at Sam's Club.
Yeah.
But I've never been a Sam's Club member either.
Costco, when I was at the FAM, was right across the street. So I did mainly for gas at first, and then I'd buy 5,000 pounds of whatever.
Prophylactics?
I've got those at home. Costco is selling a giant tub of macaroni and cheese and giving you 2 decades to eat it. The nearly 27-pound tub costs $89.99 and contains 180 servings and, again, has a shelf life of 20 years. So
the Carter girls would get through that in about 3 weeks.
Okay, so I'm going to say on macaroni and cheese, and true the style of this show, properly rated. I like macaroni and cheese. Do you like it the traditional way? Do you like when you throw some things in? Because
I would like, it's not something that I go to out of my way. Like grilled cheese and mac and cheese to me, like when I go to a restaurant, that's not on the radar.
Okay, the only place that's on the radar for me, and I go there like once every 3 years, is McCoy's in St. Louis Park, where they have a variety of macaroni and cheeses with, different meats and different things in there, So, yeah, with the girls, right? With my kids, mac and cheese. I still occasionally make craft macaroni and cheese, and I'll have some.
Absolutely.
Oh, right?
I dish up the 2 bowls. I leave a little something in there.
For you?
Oh, sure.
You're better than that. Come on. Give the girls everything. However, as much as I'm saying that I enjoy macaroni and cheese and I've shopped at Costco many times, I'm not buying the 27-pound tub that can last for 20 years because I'm worried about something I'm buying which has the life expectancy of 2 decades.
Yeah. I mean, if I've got the bunker, if I'm,
Do you have a bunker, by the way?
Not yet.
Not yet? You thinking about it?
That wall doesn't get built. I'm building the bunker. I have the first line of defense before they overtake our cabins.
Lindsay, as a gift to you, when we saw each other early next week, I had a 27-pound tub of macaroni and cheese for you. What would you think?
Well, I'd want to know if it was good mac and cheese or not. Because if it's like that, the gross, watery, doesn't actually have cheese flavor, but is just yellow.
Yeah.
No, but if it tastes like Velveeta cheese, like Velveeta mac and cheese.
Then you like it.
I'm in.
You're in for the 27-pound tub that lasts 20 years. In it that makes it last for 20 years.
I would never want to look at the label. I would never read the ingredients. But I'd have a bowl or two. I love mac and cheese. So you're posing the question to the wrong person. Because, I'm in when it comes to mac and cheese.
No milk needed with macaroni and cheese, by the way. Just butter.
Are you insane?
Yes. Oh, no, I'm stop. Right. I am insane, but, milk is
and they overdo it like
necessary.
They overdo it like on the box of – they suggest you put 4 tablespoons of butter in the mac and cheese.
I go 6.
Oh,
I mean,
my
it's the key.
Gosh.
No, I'm kidding. No, milk. I don't know. First of all, I think milk overall is. I don't. Do you have that much milk in your life?
I don't, but I mean, a, ice cold glass of milk. Properly rated.
Okay, Pat Boone. My wife makes the most incredible beer, bacon, mac and cheese. Look it up online. Total game changer. Bring it in. Bring it in. Where else are the great macaroni and cheeses here in town? Let me know. Here's Adam with an update on the amazing story involving Jamie Claus. The headline from the New York Times drew Lindsay's attention, and I'm glad she saw this. When the illness is a mystery, patients turn to these detectives. Two people to talk about this in the Undiagnosed Diseases Network. First of all, James Anderson, a director of the NIH's Division of Program Coordination, Planning, and Strategic Initiatives, and Anastasia Wise, Program Director for the UDN in the National Human Genome Research Institute Division of Genomic Medicine. Both great guests. We bring them into the conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Anastasia, I will start with you first. How did this all come about? How did the organization and the idea come together trying to help people out who have quality care, who have been to a number of different doctors and still cannot determine what exactly they have?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Undiagnosed Diseases Network, or UDN, began in 2013, and it was really intended to expand upon the success of a program, the Undiagnosed Diseases Program, that we had at the NIH Clinical Center that started back in 2008. And what this program wanted to do was take individuals that had been through all of that care, as you mentioned, who had been to see multiple doctors and still didn't have an answer, and try and take all of the latest cutting-edge research technology, take genomic sequencing, take model organisms, and try and be able to identify what might be the cause of their disease and get them a diagnosis.
So, James, how do people find you? I was drawn to this story because Lindsay and I saw it in the Times. If a patient is struggling, and again, getting quality care and including places like the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic, how does somebody say, okay, I'm sorry, I know you guys are trying, but I need to go to your organization, the Undiagnosed Diseases Network?
Sure. Well, let me back up and say that rare diseases are rare. There might be one or a few people who have them or many more, but we define it as when a disease is less than 200,000 Americans. There's about 6,000 that we know of. So it's really several percent of the American population has what we call a rare disease. Some are serious and some are not. And the problem is that they're not common. Many doctors, clinicians aren't aware of what they are. We don't know the reason for them. So a lot of people, their families, spend years suffering with a condition that no one can put a name on. And it's really isolating, and they suffer because of it. That's the reason for setting up this program. Now, how can people find it? They can simply come to the Undiagnosed Disease Network website.
James, at times, do the doctors themselves who are caring for the patient or the patient say, we feel like so far we've exhausted what we can do, but I have another group that I think can really help you out?
Yeah, that's the typical way that this works. The network prefers to take patients who can be introduced with their medical records and their histories explained, and then everyone works together as a team.
Anastasia, let me ask you this, and I'll tie to my family because I've talked often about the youngest of my three sons who has been diagnosed that he is on the autism spectrum, but we could not determine for years and years and years what he might have. And recently we were given a diagnosis that he might have something that anywhere from 30 to 200 people on the planet have. And we're still doing some work on that to determine that. Is that the type of scenario we're talking about here, where it is extraordinarily rare that somebody has this? Or is it that you're just providing a very different type of treatment for the patient?
Yes, those are definitely the kinds of cases that we see as part of the Undiagnosed Diseases Network. We recently published a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, and of the cases that were diagnosed, 31 of them were previously unknown conditions. So no one else had ever been diagnosed as having that condition previously. So really, we are looking for these really rare cases and trying to be able to help get them to that point of knowing what it is that's causing their disease.
Anastasia Wise and James Anderson with us from the Undiagnosed Diseases Network. Anastasia, who makes up the group? How does somebody become affiliated with you guys?
Yes, so the Undiagnosed Diseases Network currently has 18 sites across the country. We have 12 clinical sites that actually see the patients. We have a coordinating center that brings the network together and helps provide resources like our website for the patients to interact with. We have two model organism screening centers, and they do testing to follow up on these genetic changes that are found in the patients themselves to be able to try and determine if they're causative of disease by modeling it in different model organisms like fly and fish and worm. We also have a biorepository that stores all of our samples, a metabolomics core that helps look at the metabolome of these patients or all of those different enzymes that are affecting the interaction and metabolites in your body, and a DNA sequencing core that provides genomic sequencing information on all of the participants. So it really is a collaboration of bringing together the clinicians, the researchers, and the patients to be able to try and make a diagnosis.
James, I'm going to read right from the Times story from yesterday. In a recent study, 1,519 patients were referred to the network, but less than half were accepted for intense evaluation, no charge. The network completed the evaluations of 382 participants and found a diagnosis about a third, 132 of them. In the time since the study ended, the investigators have diagnosed another 128 patients. That's a huge number. So that's, I mean, you're well over two-thirds in this area of diagnosing these particular patients. Is that about the typical ratio?
Well, I think that the success rate of being able to provide the diagnosis and then hopefully a treatment is actually increasing as our technology gets better. We see more cases. I actually find these numbers astounding. These are people that 10, 20 years ago would have suffered their whole lives or yeah. died early. I'm just thrilled. I think this is a great success.
Anastasia, a lot of people, whether for personal reasons or they're just paying attention to what's taking place, hear a lot about the genome, right, and what is taking place and the different advancements and what we know now in 2019 that we didn't know, whether it was 5 years ago or 50 years ago. How much is that brilliant work by so many people in that area is helping what is taking place in diagnosing these illnesses, which for years and years and years, if not decades, have just baffled people and caused them a great deal of pain?
Yeah, so having the genetic information is definitely a key component of being able to make these diagnoses in the Undiagnosed Diseases Network. So out of those participants that you were just talking about who had been able to receive a diagnosis, 98 of them were made by using that genomic information from the sequencing. But it is important to understand that there are some cases as well in this group that are coming just from clinical review of the records and learning more about the patients. So though the genomic information is a really critical new piece that we have, it's also about bringing the researchers together to be able to have that comprehensive review as well.
James, in the Times story, they cited multiple examples. I'll just mention two.
Sure.
You know, where it was one individual who was sober, right, was not drinking at all, but because of what was taking place, gave off the appearance that she was drunk. Another one was a very fit individual, and all of a sudden something happened, and she had a burning sensation about her throughout her life, right? Are these the type of stories we're talking about where it happens in an unexpected manner? How can we tie these stories to what are typical of the patients, or can we say who is a typical patient?
Many of these patients actually present when they're infants, because most of these are genetic diseases and they affect the body early on. You've cited two that kind of appeared and were obvious later. I don't know if you want another example.
Sure. Go ahead.
Fascinating. It's a gentleman, he's about 60 years old when this appeared. He lives in Atlanta now. He's happy to give his name, so you can find that in the article too. He started having hearing loss. Lost his hearing, it would come back again, again, again. About 3 years later, these neurologic symptoms got even worse, and he was admitted to the hospital apparently with meningitis or inflammation around the brain, headache, high fever. It was clear that he had meningitis on all the tests, but they couldn't find a bacteria or virus. This went on for dozens of episodes over the years. He was admitted to the program, and they determined by genetic tests that he had a mutation in a gene that affected his immune system. So it looked like he was always responding to viruses and bacteria, even though they weren't there. And the great fortune for this gentleman, there was already a drug on the market used for rheumatoid arthritis that was very effective in treating this. And this man is back to normal, out of a wheelchair, and it's just miraculous.
Wow. Yeah, so
that's an uncommon example, but it shows the power of what we can do when we drill down on these specific problems.
Anastasia, last thing, just a reminder, if folks want to reach out to you and your organization, what should they do?
Yeah, so we have information on how to apply to the Undiagnosed Diseases Network on the Undiagnosed Diseases Network webpage. So that is at undiagnosed.hms.harvard.edu. You can also find more information on the NIH Common Fund webpage at the Undiagnosed Diseases Network.
Great stuff. You guys, I greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. It was a very informative and a very interesting topic, and I wish you only the best in helping out so many people.
Very happy to share.
Thank you so much. Really interesting topic when you think about the pain so many people are going through and how these folks are trying to help them out. Again, James Anderson and Anastasia Wise from the Undiagnosed Diseases Network. We talked about Rosie's departure from Channel 4 a few times this week. I wanted to mention it again because I thought 4 handled it in a fabulous and fitting way last night. And I think it also was fitting in some ways, Lindsay, that you had the unforeseen. You had breaking news. Right? All sorts of different forms of classic journalism or derivations of that. You can sit there and plan out what you're going to do. And then if you're good at what you do, when something major happens, you then cover it. And 4 covered Jamie Kloss last night multiple ways at the start with Liz Collin and Jen Mayerly, who are very good reporters. And follow up that. And that's how it is. Like, we all have our jobs where things might just totally shake things up. And in that particular business of TV news, they are right near the top of that example, where I don't know if they're going to do the whole 35 minutes on Rosie or they're going to do a little bit at the start, but you have to and you should, and they did cover Jamie Kloss, and they did it very well. And then they moved on to Mark, and there were parts of what people had a chance to see earlier in the week, but they saved a lot of good stuff. I had not seen the picture of him at the 65 World Series, which I thought was fantastic. It's like, I don't know how you come up. It seems like so many people come up with these pictures of something when they were 2 or 4, or, you know, the Bill Clinton shaking hands with JFK. I don't know. Maybe they just dubbed Rosie in there. With all the technology now, they just picked some other kid who looked like Mark and put him in the 65 World Series. Well, no, obviously they didn't do it. And then it was perfect because, as Mark has said many times, Sandy Koufax is his hero. And then they showed that with Mark interviewing him when the All-Star game was here in 1985. But it was a great cross-section of how his career has literally spanned from the point when he was a 17-year-old kid to leaving here for multiple reasons. Number one is the love of his life for decades and decades and decades, Denise, and the battle that she still is dealing with, and to be there with her all the time. Another one is Rosie wants to enjoy life. Everybody doesn't have to be a certain person who's going to be on the air in about an hour and work at 98 years of age. And we said this the other day, it's a quirky odd job when you're in the television news business where, you know, when you're home for dinner and you click them on at 5, 6, and then maybe later in the night at 10, not digging ditches, right? Not getting calluses, not physical pain, but you have a constancy in that job. You have a pattern which takes you away from so many different family matters. And Mark and Nick and Chloe and Denise missed a lot of that. Enjoy it while you can, and hopefully it's another 40-some years. And to show Mark at all the events, and I wasn't surprised at all, knowing Mark for as long as I have, that he said still the biggest one of all was Lake Placid, right? And it wasn't just Lake Placid and the U.S. Olympics for across the country. It was Herbie and all the players and what it meant here. But then it was so great to see the number of people he's covered in sports now and in the past to say that. I think my favorite part, though, was when it was people at 4 talking about what Mark has meant to them, how they've been an essential part of his life. And the most touching part was the last part, at least for me, and I want you to chime in, Lindsay, when it was a combination of two things. It was Mark and Frank sitting there looking at their moms and how funny and interesting they were when they were on 4 a lot. And then at the end, when Mark was fighting off tears, talking about Denise and talking about how this is home, and it was just great. They just, you could plan it a lot, and you put in a lot of work and a lot of creative, smart people, and sometimes it doesn't turn out the way you wanted it. The folks at Channel 4, Mark in particular, should feel elated and pleased at the tribute to somebody who deserves it, because the person he is in front of the camera is the person he is behind the scenes. He's just a top-notch person.
Marriages today don't last 50 years. So to say, you know, you're watching someone who has spent 50 years of his life in that place, and he's going to wake up today, and his role there has going to change.
I think they're having a big luncheon today. So it's kind of – today is like kind of fun for him.
Yeah, but right? Still, you know, like the idea of saying goodbye. And
sure.
I thought it was great that, you know, when they would bring someone on and then they would include how many years they've worked together.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that is so interesting. You know, I thought Chris said it so great. You know, he's been at the station for 13 years doing weather. He's not even 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's – crazy.
Yeah. It doesn't happen in
it was really
many
heartfelt.
Walks of life.
It was right? really heartfelt yep. and honest, and I think I felt lucky getting to watch it. I felt really lucky getting to see those people being vulnerable up there. You know, I mean, the stuff with their mothers, watching that and hearing, you know, Rosie talk about when his mother and Frank's mother won the Emmy for mm-hmm. their segment, and I felt really lucky that they chose to share all of that stuff with us.
It was great. I wouldn't mind if he just would have flamethrowed the place and just started going, here are the people who have bugged me the most for 5 minutes, but he did not, and I knew he was not going to. I was just chuckling about that a little bit. Mr. Carter will rejoin the conversation in a matter of moments. It's 35 past one. All right, when this happened months ago in November, we spent some time talking about it. This involved Baraboo High School. I think we did it at the time, but would that make like a top five Wisconsin city? I mean, when you just think Baraboo. It's just, you know.
It's a great name, and my high school baseball coach, who loves the show.
Thank you.
He's a native of Baraboo.
Yeah.
I played a baseball tournament in Baraboo.
Baraboo.
But as far as iconic Wisconsin names, not top five.
Not top five. Top five Wisconsin cities by name, just by the name. Not, you know, you like Madison best, yeah. You like Milwaukee, but when you think of it, you think of Wisconsin. And maybe you chuckle about it. Maybe you look at it in disdain. Or maybe you're elated, right? When you think of Wisconsin, do you have a quintessential name that comes to mind?
Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac? Yeah, that's pretty good. It's got to be... Got to have a little bit of that in there, don't you think? I think a lot of the Wisconsin's, that's my key to Wisconsin City. Okay, so the teens who are involved in the Nazi salute, many people in the area are still mad that the kids have not apologized or haven't apologized enough. Others are saying, let's let them move on. Who would want to be identified this way, in this manner? Many Wisconsin names coming in, by the way. Come in with your go-to Wisconsin city names. Now, let's not forget the most nonsensical part of the Nazi salute photo was when the photographer claimed, he said to them, okay, boys, you're going to say goodbye to your parents, so wave. And then they all did the Nazi salute. Sure. I mean, Adam, I know when I say goodbye to you, I give you the Nazi salute, and then, you know, goose step right out of the room. What did each kid have to do, in your view? How far did they have to go? Because I would say this is something that, yes, was going to be churned up even more by social media. It was going to end. Nobody wants to be judged at their worst moment. Nobody wants to be judged as a 16-year-old kid for the rest of their life. But I'm sorry, on something like this, you probably can't apologize every single moment of your day. In fact, you can't. But when something comes out which makes people think of 6 million people being brutally killed for one reason, you can spend a fair amount of time owning it and apologize, and you better damn do it.
Well, apology for sure. Also, I think an appropriate response, too, would have been to have these young men do some sort of project, some history project that they all could be involved in studying the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Leading up to it, the impact of it, doing some research on some of the people who were killed, maybe talking to some survivors or family members of survivors.
Wait, from the TV show Survivor?
Yeah,
that's right. But one of the greatest Curb Your Enthusiasms is they have a dinner party where Larry's dad brings an actual survivor of the Holocaust, and somebody else at the party brings Cody from the show Survivor, and they start having a debate on who had life worse. Cody's like, I mean— We didn't have regular like drinking water, like his high end drinking water, and the poor guy. It's just so darn good. Yes, you're 100% right. I'm done with the. And by the way, the photographer, is this clown still sticking with his pathetic response just to try to avoid some of the scrutiny? Among the names, by the way, New Richmond Golf. First of all, New Richmond Golf is in my list of the five most underrated golf courses in the general metro area. Oconomowoc.
Yeah, he said nailed it too.
Yeah, right?
Sheboygan.
Sheboygan.
That's up there. That's top five.
Is it Wauwatosa?
Wauwatosa.
Wauwatosa. That's a good one. Lindsay, do you have like a quintessential one? Sheboygan just
two different Oconomowocs, and they both spelled it correctly. That's bravo.
Yeah, well, those are probably... could they be? They don't have the area code from Wisconsin, but they could be. Are they Wisconsinites? Wisconsinians?
It's a Wisconsinite.
Wisconsin.
No, Wisconsinite.
Do you think it was 100% a Nazi salute in comparison to the actual salute by Hitler? I don't think it was. I think it was enough that it was beneath human decency. La Crosse. I spent a lot of time living in La Crosse. No.
Not a top five name.
Not a top five name. Great town.
Oshkosh.
Oshkosh.
Definitely. Yeah. So we got Oshkosh. We got Oconomowoc.
Manitowoc.
Manitowoc.
Yeah. Is this Pewaukee?
Sheboygan.
Is this Pewaukee? Is that
Pewaukee.
Fond du Lac. Pewaukee?
Pewaukee, if I remember. Pewaukee, Wisconsin, I think is near, I wanted to say it was near Green Bay, but I could be wrong. There's like Pulaski. Oh, God. Now I'm like, I'm trying to remember all of the kids who got reciprocity at the U of M who are from Wisconsin.
Sounds like you're still bitter about that.
Oh, no, no, I didn't care. It just was like, Sundays were real irritating.
Ashwaubenon. Ashwaubenon.
Here's one, and I didn't know this
maybe
one.
Maybe my is not really that much of a key. I thought it was. I was wrong.
I cheated. I Googled because my brain is
typical
having Friday farts.
Cheater.
Mishicot. It's in Manitowoc County, and Mishicot means hairy leg.
That's Adam over there.
Two of them.
Footville. Footville in Rock County.
Footville?
Footville. And Bosstown.
Wow. I'm from Oconomowoc. Also known as the 5-0 town. Why is it the 5-0 town? Am I missing something? Just because the letters, that's it?
Oh, yeah. 5-0s. I thought police. That had something to do with cops.
Yeah, well.
A lot of cops in Oconomowoc.
Yeah. Well, that's your background. Lindsay has found for me a new term. It's from Cosmopolitan. When's the last time you bought a Cosmopolitan for Jen? Have you ever bought a Cosmo for Jen?
No, I've never bought a Cosmopolitan in my life. Like a drink?
No.
Oh.
The magazine?
No.
Maybe you should. I got a lot of tips in there. I mean, they still somehow every month come up with 75 new sex tips.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I mean, how long do they research? Do they just put them sequentially in a different order, or is this just untapped list?
Real quick.
Yeah.
Pewaukee. Shocker is by Milwaukee. Pulaski is by Green Bay.
Got it. This is a new term. It's called benching. Okay? Simply put, is when you like someone enough to keep seeing them, but not enough that you want to lock it down with them, so you keep them as an option while you continue
role player
to date around. Well, how do you feel if you're the person on the bench? So you're saying you're
in how many benches you're on.
That's true. You're in the mix. Okay. You're in the mix, as the great Stu Gatz would say. But guess what? So are others. So I think that's the key, right? If you're just sitting there on the bench and waiting while he or she is sampling the rest of the starting lineup, I'm out on the bench, Carter. Would you settle for being on the bench in that scenario?
Again, if I'm on a few benches, you got to get game time somewhere.
Lindsay, is that
don't shake your head. You're thinking the same thing.
Somebody text
me?
Yes.
Oh, no, I couldn't. I was never one who could, like, play the field. Yeah.
Somebody also says
someone,
it's called the bullpen.
The bullpen. Ooh.
Call in for the big righty.
Again. Because in that case,
here comes Ron Davis.
Lindsay, if it's in the bullpen, you can't be in multiple bullpens, can you?
I mean, I guess you figuratively can. Should you is the question.
Yeah. Adam's like talking like he's from experience here.
No.
Yeah?
Again, it's all wishful thinking. It's in the past, and it would have been wishful thinking.
Yeah. You were just on one bench? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or you're telling us you were always in the starting lineup. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Well, in my own mind.
What are the other terms?
Team of one.
Are we seeing more of this? More of it says, as long as you put in the work of always sending the you free text and making plans, the bencher will take you up on your offer and meet up if they have nothing else going on. That's kind of sad. I mean, again, if you're on multiple benches, but if you're just sitting there while the other person is dabbling in a variety of other starting lineups. Not good. We'll come back with other topics, and you can give us other descriptive terms if you would like at 81807. Your Linda's Construction Time Check is 1:49. Time to create a more energy-efficient home with Season Guard Windows. Here now is a chance to win some money. Vikings making a little bit of news this afternoon. See ya, Mike Prefer, the long, long time Vikings special teams coach. Carter, do we know when he first was hired?
I'll look up that. Look it up.
What
right
is
now.
What does your gut tell you? I mean, he was. Does he go back to Chile?
I think he does. Right? Yeah.
I think he does go back to Chile. Chile, by the way, did you see the note on him the other day?
Browns.
He quit. He was going to be head coach in one of the new, not the WWE league.
2011.
But the other league. So 2011. Mike Prefer, longtime special teams coach, most notably the words he did or did not say to Chris Cluey.
Mm-hmm.
What were the words again?
Something about rounding up all homosexuals to an island and then nuking it until it glows.
Yes, I think that is correct, which I don't think is nice. I don't think it was intended as nice. And it became a very public situation between Cluey and Prefer, and then it came into a lot of this talk of football Neanderthal talk. What happens in the locker room? Was Prefer sincere about his apology? Should the Vikings have been more forceful about it? Did people get sick and tired of Cluey? Talking more about other issues as opposed to his performance. It also grew kind of silly when, to the shock of no one, the sports fans, they didn't mind when Chris would speak out on issues as long as those punts were good. But as soon as those punts were good, it was, you know what, he's spending too much time worrying about.
You can't do both.
Worrying about human decency
and
not rounding up people because they might be attracted to the same gender and sending them to another island. Did Prefer ever mention which island he thought? You know, I don't think that island really wants to be identified at this particular time. But yeah, Mike Prefer, it's over. And when you look at the kicking ineptitude for years and years and years with this club, whether it's fair or not, I'm shocked he lasted as long as he did.
That's true.
Because how often in
it's become a running joke with the team.
It has been a running joke. And part of the joke about evaluating this, and by the way, I'm not saying I have the skill, but like John DeFilippo, he hasn't been hired by anybody yet, right? Did I miss that?
I don't believe so.
You think about where he was at this point last year. When my Eagles were fly, Eagles fly. When they're flying, right, it was, who can we get in the Andy Reid / Doug Peterson tree? And they eventually, Frank Reich, when Josh McDaniels pulled the cowardice move. And then we landed John DeFilippo, and we were in love with the fact we had John DeFilippo. He was that young guy that everybody wanted that would be creative and would come up with plays. And could be the yin to the yang of hard-nosed Zim. And now we get Cousins. And, I mean, we're going to be like the San Diego Superchargers with Dan Fouts and Chuck Joyner and John Jefferson. Well, now, guess what? He's toast. And I, again, still have no idea how much was on him versus the fact that the offensive line may have been the worst offensive line I've ever watched in my entire life. And so all of a sudden now, John DeFilippo is, I mean, he's dead practically for positions. Prefer, whether it's fair or not, when you go from Walsh and what happened with him to your guy, who you are too hard on, Kai Forbath.
I like Kai.
How many times did you text me, Kai Forbath is going to cost the Vikings the Super Bowl?
I didn't say cost him the Super Bowl.
Yes, you did.
I said it'll play a role. That kicker issue will come up.
I might have to see if I've saved all your texts because you were obsessed with Kai Forbath. I was worried you were stalking Kai Forbath last year. Then Daniel Carlson. Then now our guy Dan Bailey. And then we got, you know, other people, you know, having others on. They need a kicking coach expert. I don't know if that's tied together, but in this follow the leader sheep flock mentality, it's, hey, if somebody's bad, fire the coordinator as opposed to the ineptitude. So they do this today, and I want to say right now, the three of us are putting our hats in the ring. We're a trio offering the three of us to be the special team coordinators for this football team next year. We're all in.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.